August 15, 1945, marked an unprecedented moment in Japanese history. For the first time ever, ordinary citizens heard the voice of Emperor Hirohito, their divine ruler, as he announced Japan's surrender through a crackling radio broadcast. Speaking in formal classical Japanese that many struggled to comprehend, he carefully avoided words like defeat, instead noting that the war situation has developed not necessarily to Japan's advantage. This masterpiece of euphemism transformed the emperor from god to fellow victim, claiming his vital organs are torn asunder, contemplating his subjects' suffering. The formal surrender ceremony aboard the USS Missouri and Tokyo Bay presented a stark visual contrast. Japan's once proud navy lay in ruins, while over 250 American warships filled the harbor. A thunderous flyby of 400 B-29 bombers literally darkened the sky as waves of well-fed American GIs began landing on imperial soil. General Douglas MacArthur bluntly declared Japan had fallen to fourth-rate nation status. The human toll was staggering, approximately 2.7 million Japanese dead, nearly 4% of the pre-war population. Material destruction was equally devastating, with one-quarter of national wealth simply gone, including four-fifths of ships and one-third of industrial capacity. 66 major cities were heavily bombed, destroying 40% of urban areas and leaving 30% of city dwellers homeless. For millions stranded abroad across Asia and the Pacific, surrender only began a new nightmare of prolonged repatriation, with hundreds of thousands dying before seeing home again. Post-surrender Japan experienced kyudatsu, a state of exhaustion and despair dominated by hunger. The 1945 harvest fell 40% below normal, forcing families to survive on watery gruel, sweet potato vine soups, and desperate alternatives like ground acorns. Children's weights plummeted 15 to 20% below pre-war levels. The black market thrived despite government opposition. Urban residents engaged in bamboo shoot existence, trading possessions layer by layer for food. Kimonos, watches, and family heirlooms were exchanged for mere days of rice. By 1948, an estimated 80% of food transactions occurred illegally, leading to the dark joke that the only people not living illegally are those in jail. The human toll was devastating. A November 1945 suicide note from a laborer in Yokohama revealed a father's despair at failing to feed his five children for 4 days. Women often turned to prostitution or relationships with occupation forces to survive. The 1947 death of Judge Yamaguchi, who starved while refusing black market food, even as he sentenced others for such violations, epitomized the period's moral crisis. August 15th brought an unexpected liberation for many Japanese, who removed blackout paper from windows and discovered new personal freedoms as state control weakened. This period created a unique space where social hierarchies were fluid and reinvention possible. This newfound freedom manifested in three distinct subcultures: panpan prostitutes, black marketers, and the hedonistic kasutori culture. The panpan women, though marginalized, became symbols of liberation through their Panglish language skills, access to American goods, and bold Western-style appearance that contrasted sharply with wartime austerity. The black markets exploded from 17,000 nationwide in October 1945 to 76,000 stalls in Tokyo alone. Market operators proudly displayed their three sacred regalia, aloha shirts, nylon belts, and rubber-soled shoes, satirically mimicking the emperor's imperial treasures. How do you impose freedom? This paradox defined the American occupation of Japan. Cartoonist Kato Etsuro illustrated this in The Revolution We Have Been Given, showing American hands reaching from heaven to unlock freedoms and lift burdens from the Japanese people. Critics called it rationed out freedom, highlighting the irony of imposed democracy. Even Kato noted that while chains were cut, the Japanese did not shed a drop of blood or raise a sweat to earn their liberation. Though nominally an Allied occupation, America led the effort. General MacArthur wielded unprecedented power, combining both executive and legislative authority through direct fiat. The reforms were swift and sweeping, dissolving zaibatsu conglomerates, implementing land reform, abolishing state Shinto, and guaranteeing labor rights. The 1946 Constitution crowned these changes, enshrining democratic ideals and renouncing war. Conservative Japanese elites, who had hoped merely to restore pre-militarist conditions, were stunned by these structural reforms. Until surrender, Emperor Hirohito embodied Japan's ideological core, with soldiers carrying the Field Service Code declaring their divine mission to spread the imperial way. Yet while his subordinates faced war crimes charges and execution, the emperor's role in Japan's aggression went uninvestigated. A calculated strategy emerged to preserve the national polity. The public was instructed to apologize to the emperor, not for the war, but for failing to win it. A new narrative portrayed Hirohito as if he had only assumed power in August 1945, conveniently erasing his wartime role. The iconic photograph of MacArthur and Hirohito standing together simultaneously established MacArthur's authority and his endorsement of the emperor. SCAP had already decided to protect Hirohito, claiming he could not be convicted in a democratic court of law due to supposed coercion that negated his responsibility. In February 1946, a sixth-floor ballroom in the Daiichi Building became the unlikely birthplace of Japan's post-war democracy. There, 24 Americans, 16 officers, and 8 civilians, including 4 women, labored intensely to draft a new constitution after concluding the Japanese government was incapable of proposing acceptable revisions. On February 13th, General Whitney presented GHQ's draft constitution to stun Japanese officials who had expected to discuss their own conservative proposal. Whitney delivered his ultimatum. Accepting the GHQ draft offered the best guarantee of rendering the emperor unassailable, while rejection would mean SCAP taking their draft directly to the Japanese people. The resulting document was revolutionary, particularly Article 9's renunciation of war and Article 24's guarantee of gender equality. Though imposed by conquerors and theoretically amendable after occupation, it remained unchanged for decades despite American pressure to revise Article 9's pacifist provisions. The no-war vision encoded in the Constitution has kept debates about rearmament continuously engaged with fundamental questions of war, peace, and constitutional guarantees. While Americans expected Japan to produce basic exports like ceramics and textiles, Japanese planners envisioned a future built on wartime technological advances. In 1945, Mitsubishi's head, Iwasaki Koyada, called for a great 100-year plan focused on technology. A 1946 report urged Japan to focus on high-value manufacturing, electrical equipment, precision instruments, vehicles, and chemical products. The Korean War in 1950 brought unexpected economic benefits through U.S. special procurements, which Prime Minister Yoshida called a gift of the gods, an ironic echo of how Japan had recently viewed peace and democracy as gifts from heaven. What emerged was a hybrid Scapanese model, combining Japanese bureaucratic capitalism with American influences, built on wartime foundations. Key wartime institutions, corporate networks, employment security, and government guidance became pillars of post-war success. By 1979, Japan's rise from a fourth-rate nation to number one status stunned the world.